Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, doctors and health experts are urging parents to make sure the kids are up to date on their vaccinations ahead of back-to-school season, a reminder made even more important this year amid a major outbreak of measles cases nationwide. Also this morning, we've stuffed the bus with school supplies. Now it's time to outfit students with new school clothes for the coming year. Ohio Means Jobs has a program that can help with that. And happening around town, it may seem obsolete today, but it was the technology that literally built America. We step back in time this weekend at the Northwest Ohio Antique Machinery Association show. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, July 30th, 2026. So this is pretty bold. This is really bold. U.S. News and World Report, they do this each year, has named the best state in America. Now, there are an awful lot of lists, and we talk about these from time to time, that rank some of the best things about various states in America. The best place to raise a family, the best place to retire, the best place to start a career. You know, those. But to go all out and say this is the best state in America, I mean, that's just opening yourself up for an argument. But U.S. News and World Report does this every year, and the state of Utah has been named the best state in America. It is the fourth year in a row that Utah has been named the best state. So they're on a roll. Utah came out on top of the ranking due to strong showings in a number of different categories. They have, I think, eight different categories that they measure the metrics and then average it out. Utah is not number one in any individual category, but they are high enough that they are number one overall, because there are other states that are like at the top of one category, but then at the bottom of another. And Utah is very steadily near the top of everyone, even though they don't top any individual category. Anyway, so Utah's number one. Louisiana is at the bottom of the list. So that's it at number 50. But Ohio is not much better. I mean, Louisiana, we can laugh at them last on the list. But Ohio checks in at number 42. Yikes. 42 out of 50. We were 37th in crime and corrections, 29th in education, 36th in healthcare, 43rd in natural environment, 38th in economy, 28th in fiscal stability, 31st in infrastructure, and our best showing was 18th in the category of opportunity. Now, those are the overarching categories. I don't know the individual metrics they used to determine those categorical rankings, but if you take all of those numbers and you average it out, Ohio comes in at number 42. So I just put it out there and let the argument begin, because, you know, that's and honestly, that's what they're hoping for in ranking. I mean, how do you honestly rank the best state? I mean, OK, those are all important categories, but you're just opening yourself up to an argument, and that's what they want you to do, because they put this online. They generate clicks. They generate conversation. It drives their audience participation numbers on social media and all of that's what it's really all about. So, you know, take it for what it's worth, but it is interesting nonetheless. Utah number one, Louisiana number 50, and Ohio at 42nd. So there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started. This is kind of interesting. An Austin, Texas-based company called Mithril Defense is deploying, and I saw this and I thought, wow, why did it take so long for someone to come up with this idea? Mithril Defense is deploying pepper gel armed drones in schools. the idea is to prevent like active shooter emergencies or neutralize an active shooter in the school. The Campus Guardian Angel, the Campus Guardian Angel Service, described as the nation's first active shooter suppression service, stores the drones in school hallways, and teachers can activate the drones during emergencies. It's like setting off fire alarm. There's a master switch, you hit it, and the drones deploy. And I guess using AI, they seek out the intruder and neutralize the drones launch within seconds using sirens, pepper gel, and distraction devices to confront threats before law enforcement arrives. So it's not meant to fully neutralize the threat, but buy time until law enforcement can arrive and do their thing. This is available now. This is being deployed in three states. Georgia allocated more than $500,000 in state funding for five school districts to participate. And according to Campus Guardian Angel's own data, 1,000 school shootings occurred in the past 3 years with 800 people killed or wounded. This is what they are trying to avoid. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if we would hope that this would never happen. But if it happens in one of these schools where they have this system, it'd be interesting to see if it's effective. And if so, if that means more schools will be outfitted with this system. So Georgia allocated $500,000 for five school districts to participate. You do the math. Does that mean it's like $100,000 to deploy it in a school district? That seems like a pretty good investment of $100,000. You know what I mean? I mean, if it works, that seems to be a reasonable investment to protect kids in schools. So we'll see. I thought it was an interesting idea. Wonder what took so long. Have you ever heard the... I chuckled at this. Have you ever heard that old joke that we shouldn't have to kill animals for food when we can just go to the grocery store and buy our meat there? You've heard that joke, right? Well, it seems a fair number of young people do not understand why that's funny. A poll, recent poll of 500 kids between the ages of 6 and 11 found that 1 in 5 believe that fruits and vegetables originate in the store. That they just appear in stores. 2 in 5, up to 2 in 5, do not make the connection with animal products either. Some of the top shockers, that bananas grow on trees, kids were blown away when they were told that bananas grow on trees, that carrots grow underground, and that cheese comes from animals. So you may be, now these were kids 6 to 11, so you may wonder, do parents know better? Well, 9 in 10 said that they were confident that they understand where foods come from, but nearly half admit that they struggle to answer questions from their kids about how our food goes from farm to fork. So say they understand, but they can't explain it. This is where we are now. This is where we are now. Kind of interesting. Speaking of things that gave me a chuckle, I saw this. Willie Nelson is joining the chorus, speaking out against the construction of data centers across the U.S. Willie Nelson, 93-year-old country legend, published an open letter on social media calling on residents of his hometown in Abbott, Texas, to fight against data centers invading our land. And I get the opposition to data centers. It's certainly been, you know, a hot button issue in our community, as has been with many communities across the country. But I wonder if Willie Nelson realizes the irony of posting that call to action on social media, where everything you post on social media is stored in a data center somewhere. So a bit ironic. Also, something worth keeping in mind. Willie Nelson was born in 1933. He's 93 years old. He was born in 1933. That is the same year that FM radio was patented and television was still in early development. and it was 15 years before vinyl records became the standard in the music industry. That's the other thing. Where is all of Willie Nelson's music stored that people stream these days? So, I mean, the concept of a data center is kind of foreign to somebody who was born before vinyl records, you know? But anyway, I get it. It's just kind of humorous. Just kind of humorous. And by the way, speaking of social media, how do you feel about this? For most of us who grew up prior to the advent of social media, the idea of someone being a content creator as a profession seems very odd. It just seems very odd to me that someone could be a content creator by profession. And yet, Arizona State University is introducing a bachelor's program in content creation. Beginning this fall, you can get a bachelor's degree in content creation. It is offered through the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Students will learn how to build online audiences and brands while creating digital content, including videos and podcasts. The program's capstone project requires students to launch a social media account and demonstrate measurable audience growth. So, yes, it's just sign of the times. This is, you know, the world that we live in. And I guess we need to acknowledge that if that's how many people get their information these days, I guess it's an idea whose time is come. A bachelor's degree in content creation. All right. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Mostly sunny today with a high in the 80s, just a few clouds tonight, low in the 60s. Flag City Balloon Fest is coming up. It'll be held August 7th, 8th, and 9th at Finley's Emory Adams Park. At a previous Balloon Fest, we went up with pilot Johnny Hodge in his Disco Lemonade Balloon, and Johnny shared with us why he likes the activity so much.
The people, I mean, right there, there's a perfect example. You got people out at, what time is it? 8 o'clock in the morning in their driveway. You know, excited to see the balloons come over. You got kids jumping on the trampoline at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, that's what I like about it. You land in a neighborhood like this and you're going to have a dozen or so kids come out and check out the balloon.
Get more information about this year's Balloon Fest and see video from previous year's media flights we went up on in this story on our website. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine is expressing grave concerns about the ending of temporary protected status for Haitian immigrants in Ohio.
To so many people in Springfield, Ohio, thousands of Haitians live there under TPS. Governor Mike DeWine says the crackdown is a mistake that would hurt the state's economy.
I think history tells us that this country was built with immigrants. These are people who have opened restaurants, they've opened other businesses, they've rehabbed houses, they've created jobs as well as filled jobs. And so to lose them, it's frankly a blow to Springfield, and it's a blow to the state of Ohio.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Get more on our website. Blanchard Valley Health System is offering training to better support people with dementia. BVHS is inviting people to their upcoming Dementia Friends community session, where people will learn more about the condition and the best approaches for supporting those with dementia. BVHS says whether you're a caregiver, a family member, or simply want to learn more, this free training is for you. Get more details about this upcoming Dementia Friends community session in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, you know, Findlay City School students will be back in class 2 weeks from today. In other news, measles cases in the U.S. have reached a 35-year high, surpassing the total for last year in just the first half of 2026. Dr. Girther Mallya is a senior policy officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation with us this morning. And it is that confluence of these two things that is of concern to health officials this back to school season, right?
That's right. Yeah, we have seen just in the past year and a half more measles cases in this country than the prior 25 years. And that's a direct result of a decline in childhood vaccinations in this country.
And correct me if I'm wrong, this is something that was considered to have been eradicated 25 years ago.
That's exactly right, because we have such an effective vaccine against measles. Two doses, child gets the first dose around a year of age and the second just before starting school, 4 to 6 years of age. Those two doses of vaccines are 97% effective at preventing measles infection and all the complications that come with it. But unfortunately, we're seeing more and more parents delay or just skip the vaccine altogether.
And as we know, again, as we come up to on back to school season, we know that children are not the most hygienic creatures to begin with. So the message is that childhood vaccinations are the key in staying on top of that regimen to keep this from spiraling out of control, because that's really what the fear is.
That's right. You know, I've been a family doctor for over 20 years, and I'm an uncle to six nephews and nieces. And the advice that I would give to my family is the same advice that I would give to your listeners, to get your children vaccinated fully and on time. It's the best thing for their own health, but also for the health of kids in their community that may not be able to be vaccinated because of a cancer diagnosis or another immune system problem. And then lastly, if enough kids are vaccinated against things like measles, it can prevent the outbreaks that we've been seeing all across the country.
And we can get back to that point where we consider it eradicated. Now, earlier this year, folks may remember the CDC overhauled its recommended vaccination schedule. What do those changes mean for school-aged children? Again, heading into back to school season.
Yeah, that's one of the many things that's causing confusion for parents. And I really sympathize because there's so much information out there, some of which is good, but a lot of which is false and really just about creating fear. With the vaccine schedule, the federal government, without any new data about vaccine harms, said we're going to drop six vaccines from the recommended schedule for kids. The vast, vast majority of family doctors and pediatricians said that's the wrong move. These vaccines are keeping our kids healthy and letting them grow up strong. So a group of pediatricians actually sued the federal government and said, you made that decision without going through the right process and without presenting any new data. So those changes have been blocked. But the thing that parents need to know is if you have questions about vaccines, any question about vaccines, talk to your child's pediatrician or family doctor. If you find information online, confirm it and corroborate it with your family doctor.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was leading with this, because with those changes to the vaccine schedule or those proposed changes to the vaccine schedule and all of the seemingly conflicting information that is out there, it is certainly understandable that parents would be somewhat confused. And I will go even further and say that a healthy skepticism of anything that comes from the government is probably a good thing. And again, you say this is why it's a perfect example of why building trust with your family doctor is important.
Exactly. You know, that time where you can ask your questions and get the best advice that your family's doctor is able to provide. What I'll say in addition is if you're going somewhere online for information about vaccines, go to aap.org. That's the American Academy of Pediatrics. That's the group of pediatricians all across the country. And they have the most up-to-date, complete recommendations around childhood vaccines.
So what are some of the questions that parents should ask when they are speaking with their family doctor? Because that in and of itself can sometimes be a bit intimidating.
Yeah. Harkening back to one thing I said, I think it's a great question to ask your family doctor or pediatrician. What would you recommend for your own kids or kids in your family? So that's one. Two, parents have a lot of questions about side effects. So please ask that question. The most common side effect from vaccines is pain at the injection site and sometimes a fever. Very, very, very small number of kids can have allergic reactions to vaccines, but that is exceedingly rare. So please ask the question around side effects. And one other is that parents often have a question about is, well, do I have to get all these vaccines on the schedule that you recommend? Or can I just space them out or wait a little bit? The reason that's important is parents often think they can wait and they have the intention to come back, but life gets in the way. And that is one of the big reasons that children fall behind on vaccines and we're seeing outbreaks like we're seeing.
And again, we talk about this in the context of the measles outbreak that has been in the news, but this is certainly, the concern is not certainly limited to measles. What are some of the other things that you would be concerned about that we might see come fall and winter if we don't have our kids vaccinated? I mean, what's on the horizon? What are we concerned about?
Yeah, it's a great question because measles, you can think about as a canary in the coal mine. It is one of the most infectious diseases that is out there. So it's often the first thing that we see surge when there's a decline in vaccines. So if we're seeing measles cases now, later we might see kids with things like mumps or rubella. And again, these are things that parents and a lot of doctors don't even have experiences with because the childhood vaccine program has been so successful. One thing I just want to say is that since parents don't have experiences with it, I was reading a story recently of a doctor caring for a kid with measles in the hospital. And the parent said to the doctor, "I didn't know my child could get this sick from measles." And that is the situation we want to prevent for every parent and every child in this country.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. And I think this is something that I really hadn't considered until you just mentioned it. You know, let's say a child is not vaccinated and does come down with one of these diseases. There's a good chance that parents aren't going to know what to do. Maybe even the doctor might not immediately know what to do because they haven't had to deal with it before.
Yeah.
So
I think what's happening in a lot of medical settings is that people are brushing up, doctors, nurses, others, about how these diseases present and then how to respond to them. So it is, yeah, it's a really serious issue that is completely preventable. And we just want to encourage parents again, ask the questions that you have and get your kids vaccinated on time and fully.
And again, to reemphasize, there is really no substitute for having these discussions with your family physician, someone you presumably trust on such matters. You should anyway. But that being said, you mentioned that there are trustworthy resources available for people who are seeking vaccine information.
That's right. I'll just say again, aap.org, that's the American Academy of Pediatrics. Great information about vaccines, but also about a whole host of other children's health issues.
And they are all of concern, especially this time of year. Dr. Geerthor Malia, Senior Policy Officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation with us this morning. Dr. Malia, thanks very much for taking the time, laying it out for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
But you remember, a week or so ago, we were out at McDonald's collecting school supplies for our Stuff the Bus campaign to get those donations into the hands of the kids that need them this weekend. And now that we have stuffed the bus with the school supplies, the pencils and the crayons and all of that, now it's time to outfit students for the new school year with new clothes, for the new school clothes. Ohio Means Jobs actually has a program that can help with that. And joining us this morning is Randall Galbraith. He is Director of Job and Family Services here locally. First of all, tell us about this program here.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me on. This is a program that I think we've run for the last 6 years. We have some funding to help close school kids age 5 to 18, as long as they're residents of Hancock County and they're enrolled in school. We do have an income requirement that the family be at or below 150% of the federal poverty level. And what I'd say about that is let us figure that out if you're interested.
I was going to ask, what is the, you know, what does that equate to? But
Don't try to figure that out. Just come to us, and you can come out to Ohio Means Jobs at 7746 County Road 140, Suite B here in Findlay, or you can call 419-429-8083. And what we will do is if for qualifying kids, they can get up to $275 to be spent at some of our partners, which are Kohl's, Once Upon a Child, Plato's Closet, and Gabe's for clothing. We have agreements with those wonderful vendors. And you can get some school clothes for your kids. Start the school year upright.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because we were talking last week during our school supplies drive, the importance of starting kids off right with the right school supplies, all the pencils and the notebooks and, you know, all of those things that they need. But this is something that is important on a different level. I mean, obviously, a kid can learn regardless of what they're wearing, but it psychologically, it makes a huge difference to go into school into the school year with new clothes. Obviously, that is very important for kids that age to be kind of on fashion and all of that. So this really, you can't just dismiss this as unimportant.
No, not absolutely. And if or anyone that has small children knows that keeping them in fitting clothes is a big task. Yeah. I mean, they grow pretty quick. So, you know, we want to make sure that we start our kids off right with school. It's $275 per child. We also have a shoe program going on. And every 12 months, if you qualify, same qualifications, you can get $50 per child for some new shoes, because we know kids outgrow and wear out shoes as well.
Yeah. So I'm curious, this is an interesting program administered through Ohio Means Jobs. Why Ohio Means Jobs? Frankly,
we're running out of Ohio Means Jobs instead of the Job and Family Services Building, because that's where I have the staff right now that can run this program effectively. It could just as well have been run out of our family assistance programs with this funding, but I've got some really expert staff there at Ohio Means Jobs. And again, if just as a side note, if you're looking for some employment, good place to come in and find some help for resumes or finding a job.
And the other point that I wanted to make sure that we emphasize is that you don't have to be on any of the other associated assistance programs or anything like that to qualify for this one, right?
So that's right. Absolutely not. So again, a resident of Hancock County, children between the age of 5 and 18 that are attending school, and then let us figure out the income level. You can either come in and fill out that application in person at Ohio Means Jobs, or you can call and the number that I gave, 419-429-8083, and we'll be happy to either email you or snail mail you an application.
And this program runs through when?
August 31st, or until our funding runs out. It just depends on the demand we have on the program, but we do need the completed applications in by August 31st.
Okay. Again, if not earlier, and obviously, yes, as we know, that school for Findlay City School students begins here in just a couple of weeks. Do folks have to wait for that voucher, or they get it right away?
It sort of depends on demand and what my staff can do. There might be a little bit of a wait before they get the voucher. It's right now, I'd say it's maybe a couple weeks, a week to 2 weeks before we're getting those out.
Okay, so it would be a good idea to get that done today, if possible. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
And again, the requirement is for 150% of the federal poverty level. What documentation will folks need to have to know or to demonstrate they qualify for that?
This is where you get outside my expertise. And I get to say I have staff for that. Okay. I'm not really sure. It's I believe it's self attestation with some income. Proof, but it's not overly cumbersome. We're having a pretty high demand right now. There's a several of these forms that are waiting for my signature right now. And I'll be doing that as soon as we get off air. But yes, please come talk to us, get an application, fill it out, get it into us as soon as you can so we can get that voucher out there.
And as you mentioned, that just underscores the point of all of this, the incredible demand that you are seeing for this. I mean, this is not something that affects just a handful of folks. There are a lot of people struggling right now.
Yeah, and then traditionally we have a couple hundred kids that are able to take advantage of this program each year. So I would expect probably more this year than we've seen before.
Absolutely. So once again, mention how folks apply, and we'll emphasize that you want to do this ASAP. How do we go about doing it?
You can visit us at 7746 County Road 140 Suite B in Findlay, Ohio. That's out at the old county home on the second floor, Ohio Means Jobs Center, Hancock County. Or you can call 419-429-8083 and we'll email you, or we will U.S. Postal Service you an application.
All right, very good. Again, Randall Gabbert is Director of Job and Family Services locally. Their school close voucher program is ongoing right now. Great opportunity for folks in need to outfit their kids for the new school year. And Randall, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for helping get the word out.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are two separate and distinct groups: breaking news and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
A bride-to-be in Kaysville, Utah, is accused of starting a fire at a church the day before her wedding was set to take place there. Whatever happened to the good old-fashioned runaway brides? You know, in my day, a bride didn't want to get married. She just took off and disappeared. No, 25-year-old Lenita Joy Moreno was arrested this week on numerous charges. Police say that she set the blaze, causing over $100,000 in damages to the church. Investigators say they learned that she stole three lighters earlier in the day from an area hardware store. I'm assuming they have more evidence than just that. While a motive for her actions has not been revealed, authorities say that she also had not actually gotten a license to get married, even though she told everyone else that she had. The plot thickens. Set fire to the church. I don't want to really get married. How can I get out of this? Oh, I know. I'll set fire to the church. I have a feeling, and I'm just going out on a limb here, I'm thinking that the groom-to-be probably just dodged a big bullet right there. You know what I mean? Elsewhere in the broken news, an Iowa woman was arrested last Friday after a witness reported her riding a Husqvarna lawnmower while appearing intoxicated at a Casey's parking lot just outside of Iowa City. She took the riding mower for a little joyride. Michelle Hudson, age 36, was stopped about a mile from her home. Officers noted slurred speech, poor balance, and bloodshot eyes during field sobriety tests. However, her breathalyzer registered under the legal limit, which led police to believe that she was impaired by drugs, perhaps. She was charged with operating under the influence and driving under suspension. Apparently, if your license is suspended, you can't even drive a riding lawnmower. Certainly not on public roads. She also has a record that includes theft, drug possession, assault, and other offenses. This is not her first run-in with the law. Let's just say that they are acquainted. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a bit of unexpected excitement at the Gulf Shores International Airport in Alabama earlier this month when a traveler attempted to bring five cannonballs through security. The cannonballs, which were wrapped in paper towels and packed into a passenger's bags, triggered a security check. Surprise, surprise. The lead TSA officer, Justin Dupree, first thought that the objects might be like exercise equipment, medicine balls. But then upon closer inspection said, no, this is something else. The Baldwin County Bomb Squad responded and determined that the cannonballs were inert, but they still could not be taken on board the plane. First of all, because they are technically still artillery munitions and are considered prohibited items, as you might expect. And the second reason why the passenger wasn't allowed to board the plane with the cannonballs is because it was determined that they had been stolen from the historic military site at Fort Morgan. That takes guts to put nearly half a dozen stolen cannonballs in your carry-on luggage. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
You're invited to the Night Jazz Concert to benefit Flag City Honor Flight, Sunday, August 2nd, from 4:30 till 7:30 at 50 North, located at 339 East Melrose in Findlay. The concert is free, but donations will be accepted. Come out for food, raffles, music, and fun Sunday, August 2nd, from 4:30 to 7:30 at 50 North, as Night Jazz performs to benefit Flag City Honor Flight. Doors open at 3:30. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We are in a pretty big election year. Less than 100 days from now, we go to the polls. We're already seeing the attack ads from the candidates in the governor's race and the Senate race. And it won't be long before the candidates in the other races start lobbing their insults and attacks on each other. And it's always one of those things where a lot of Americans look at the political process, especially the ugliness of it and all of the money that's spent on this, and ask themselves, is this the best we can do? I mean, is this really the way it's supposed to work? And you can either resign yourself to the fact that this is the way it is, or you can advocate for changes to the system. Well, as it turns out, most Americans do support sweeping political reforms, but achieving them is something else entirely. A Pew Research survey finds 87% of Americans favor congressional term limits. 79% support maximum age limits for elected officials. That's certainly become a talking point in recent years, maximum age limits. 74% would favor age limits for Supreme Court justices. And 72% want caps on political campaign spending. And for as politically divided as we seem to be, majorities in both partisan coalitions have expressed strong support for these changes that we're talking about here. At least 63% prefer replacing the Electoral College with a direct popular vote for president. Although on this point, there is a distinct partisan tilt. 80% of Democrats support a popular vote system, just 46% of Republicans. But even 46% is a pretty significant number. But again, actually implementing any of these changes, well, that's a different animal. You really can't expect any of these things to actually happen because Supreme Court rulings suggest that nearly all of these changes would require constitutional amendments, which is one of the world's hardest things to do. It is a process that requires two-thirds congressional approval and ratification by 38 states. Maybe the 38 states we could get there, but the idea of Congress approving term limits on themselves, I mean, why would they vote against their interest, right? So you got to think that this is never going to happen. The Constitution, by the way, has been amended 27 times in 237 years. So, give you an idea of the height of the bar that we're talking about here. Meanwhile, 77% of Americans say that the political system needs major reform, But just 27% believe that that kind of change is actually possible. Well, happening this weekend at the Hancock County Fairgrounds, it is the big annual antique machinery show, an event put on each year for the past more than a half century by the Northwest Ohio Antique Machinery Association. And President Jim Aris is with us this morning. Jim, this is really a show with a lot of history in and of itself, been going on for a half a century.
That's correct, Chris. It's been going on since 1971, started in Bluffton and came to Findlay in 1980. So this is our 55th year.
And what always amazes me when I walk around the fairgrounds and I see all of this antique machinery is, you know, this was the technology, you know, the high tech, latest and greatest of its day. I mean, we may think about it as being sort of obsolete technology now, but this is, you know, what really built America.
Oh, that's very true. You know, it beat horses, you know, you didn't have to feed it 24/7, right. You know, whether it was steam or the early, you know, gas tractors, it all, was progress.
And I know that you farm you know, given the agriculture nature of our county and Northwest Ohio, you know, I look at this and say, can you imagine having to rely on this technology today? And yet, again, at the time, this was a huge advancement for agriculture.
Oh, that's very true. Yes. You know, today, if you was farming with a steam engine, you know, you got to go out a couple hours in advance before you was ever ready to work to get the fire going and get pressure up.
Yeah.
You know, today you just go out and turn a key and away you go. So a lot easier, a lot less work.
Yeah. And what does it take to, you know, keep this, this old technology alive? I mean, you know, you talk about what was required to make it work in its prime. I can't even imagine the work that goes into preserving this stuff today.
Oh, a lot of work, you know, from restoring the tractors, you know, finding parts on some of the rare ones you know, on the steam engines. You're building boilers if you have to. It's not cheap. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's an expensive hobby, or can be an expensive hobby.
Yeah. And there's, this is a huge show. Folks come from all over to see this. There's a huge enthusiast group.
Yes. This is, we have, I think currently around 21 board members that help run this show. And yeah, we draw from, several states away.
Yeah.
You know, that brings stuff to the show.
So talk a little,
whether it's the gas engines or flea markets or whatever, you know, we're doing quite a draw.
I was going to say, there's a lot that is going on and something for everyone to enjoy. Kind of talk about all of the things that are going on through the weekend and give us the lowdown on the show here.
Okay. Steam engine area, you know, we'll be running a sawmill out here cutting logs. We'll have the threshing machine running throughout the weekend.
Right.
There'll be garden tractor pulls that are Friday evening, truck and tractor pull. The tractors will be through the afternoon on Saturday. Truck pull gets going Saturday evening. You know, the antique tractors are here. The gas engines are up there in that area running. Flea markets, we got a huge trading post. Food trucks galore. There's kids activities out here, church service Sunday morning, all kinds of activities going on.
And give us all of the details on admission. And is it kind of like the fair? Where do we get in? I mean, what is the kind of the protocol here?
We use the main entrance up there on Sandusky Street.
Okay.
And we use the fish lock in the fish lock entrance.
Okay.
$5 a person coming in. I believe on Saturday for the pools, they start going to a $10 gate at 2:00.
Okay.
On Saturday. Sunday, like a lot of the shows, there ain't much of a show. We don't charge a gate on Sunday. Everybody's kind of loading up, leaving.
Okay.
So, you know, if people want to come out Sunday morning, there'll still be some stuff here, but you know, a lot of people's heading home for the work week the next week.
Yeah. So Friday and Saturday are really the big days for this.
Those are the big days. Come out and enjoy us.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, lots of food, craft show, and all of the vendors and, you know, all of that. So lots of things going on in addition to how many engines and you know, the machinery, how much of that is that? I mean, do you have, I don't mean to put you on the spot with a number, but like you said, you draw from all over. How many folks will be there with their machinery?
On average, the gas engine area has someplace in the neighborhood of 200 to 300, maybe 400 gas engines.
Wow.
Tractors are in the 500 to 600 range. Steam engines were normally between 10 and 15 steam engines.
Mm, goodness. It is really a blast from the past. And one of the things, again, to go back to what we were talking about, this is the technology that really built America into the industrial and manufacturing and agricultural powerhouse that it is today. And in this, you know, 250th year, we're celebrating America 250 and all of that great history. This is a lot of that history that is there on display, not just on display, but actually operating. You can see it working.
That is correct. Yes. You know, like when you're talking steam engines, there's someone that's going to be out here that's well over 100 years old, you know, from the, you know, early 1920s, 19 teens, you know, that'll be out here, not just on, like you said, not just on display. They'll be out here working and running the sawmill or one of the fans or power eaters or, you know, everything we have out here. So, it definitely will be on display working.
Great thing to bring the kids, and this is literally living history. Again, the Antique Machinery Association show happening this weekend at the Hancock County Fairgrounds. And Jim Aris, president of the Northwest Ohio Antique Machinery Association, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform. That will help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much for that. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Findlay Planning and Zoning Committee Chair Heather Kenzinger discusses the framework on zoning rules for data centers that will be presented to City Council next week. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.